Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Monday, August 3rd. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by Tim Priester and Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated. Guys, we are just over 24 hours away at the time of taping Marcus Freeman's introductory press conference for the 2026 season. A couple days later, we will see our first and only entire August camp practice when the Irish kick it off on Thursday. So we might as well wrap up this offseason with the final bit of lingering off-season, off-the-field news, because that's what happens these days, Tim Priester and Drew. There's a lot of off-the-field news in college football, but on Friday, and Drew Mentock has covered this expertly, on Friday, Judge Charlotte Sweeney in Colorado ruled, as part of the Wisney versus NCAA case, all players from the class of 2022 are eligible for a fifth season. At that point, regardless of whether they redshirt or not, was the information. That is no longer true. I'm going to turn it over to you, Drew. Start off with the one guy it really could impact at Notre Dame. We'll get into if it will impact the roster. But also, we have a few changes, I think, or a few clarifications for people that could for this ruling.
Yeah, so the one player that it could work out for Notre Dame if they wanted to go that route was bringing back defensive end junior Tuli Alimaka. He and Eli Reardon were the only two true seniors on the roster last year who didn't redshirt at any point and could have potentially used that extra year and didn't know about it going into it. So she, as you mentioned, she did clarify things over the weekend. She's not going to change every other NCAA bylaw to create this kind of crazy free agency season right before the season or fall camp kicks off. So the portal doesn't open. That was obviously in January, so players couldn't change teams, which is why junior is really Notre Dame's only option. Unless you were previously in the portal, if junior, I guess, would have had to enter the portal randomly thinking he was out of eligibility. If you signed a contract, including going to training camps, you're not eligible. So things like that. So it does limit it quite a bit. And they, I believe for basketball, they are supposed to open a transfer portal window August 3rd to today through the 8th or 10th, I believe. So basketball is a little different story, but for football, it is pretty limited. I don't know all the Notre Dame opponents' rosters intimately, but it shouldn't create too much chaos from that perspective. Plus, the 105-man rosters are still in effect too. So you're going to have your budget, your salary cap, or however you're looking at that, the number of players you want on your team. And so you would potentially have to cut people. But we've seen with the chaos, there's other teams that are adding 80 new players in a season like North Carolina did 2 years ago. So there are obviously coaches who are going to want to take advantage of this, but I don't think it's going to have much impact in Notre Dame.
I believe it was stated on the Irish Illustrated Insider podcast when we first started talking about 5 for 5 or when 5 for 5 was passed. Yeah, it's a great rule until somebody takes legal action against it. And this would be an example of that. But as Drew pointed out, and the judge actually followed up with a clarification saying that it doesn't apply to anyone that has had any involvement professionally with the NFL, whether drafted, signed a free agent contract, et cetera. So I think that makes it a little bit more palatable. The timing of it is obviously very difficult. Notre Dame's roster, they're in a position where this is not something that's really urgent. For some schools, it probably could be, depending upon, how many quality players they feel that they lost, because of not having that year of eligibility. But yeah, it created a bit of a firestorm heading into the weekend. But what do you guys think about? I mean, would you want Tuli Alimaka back on the roster?
I mean, in a vacuum, yes. But there's a lot of more concerns than just adding Junior. Here's the pros of it: great teammate. So people are going to be happy to see Junior Tuli Alimaka come back. At absolute minimum, he's your number four defensive end and a starter on special teams. All that sounds really good, right there. You got to pay him. I'm not sure what Mike, they're just getting into the cons now. You obviously have to pay him. As we were talking before this, what does that mean? Probably have to come back at the seniors, what the senior rate was, what he was at before. Although maybe if he thinks he gets a second, this is a surprise second chance at life. Maybe he's a little bit on the discount. What do you have in your three defensive ends besides him? $2 million? Bryce Young, Boubacar Traore, and Keon Keeley? Yet three defensive ends at $2 million. The other con is Iwatade, for me, is a rising young player that over 16 games, I think, could make an impact like Traore did as a freshman when he played just a little, but then you had to hold him back because you couldn't play more than 4 games. Well, Iwatade, he could play 6. Maybe he could play the last 6 games. That can't help there, but it's not happy camp. If Marcus Freeman and Chris Ash love Junior Tui Halamaka, they're going to add him. If they love him, they're going to add him because beat him out. That's what you got to tell him. You got to tell Keon Keeley, beat him out. You don't want him. You don't want him to beat you out. Beat him out. So maybe it makes Keon Keeley and Logan Thomas better. It's tough on a guy like Iwatade. I mean, you're getting a fifth year Junior Tui Halamaka, and you're not really comparing to the 18-year-old freshman, but I don't know if they'll, I just don't know if they would do it at this point. But Tim, I think you said it right before this thing. It helps the team. If just say it that way, it helps the team if he comes back.
Yeah, this is a team with, they don't have a whole lot of holes, but when we talk about what do they need, well, you know, an extra defensive end, that's something that we've mentioned throughout the summer because you're not sure where Keeley is. Very confident about, you know, Rodney Dunham, what he can do, but again, still a true, still a true freshman.
More defensive end money than I thought.
No, and I, you know, I mean, I think you make a good point. Do you want to slow the development of Iwatade? He looked good in the spring. I don't know, but you make a good point in that he's a good teammate. Everybody would probably welcome him back. He would be a, you know, run stopper, not a pass rusher per se, which, you know, probably wouldn't necessarily take away too many snaps from the two freshman defensive ends, right, since they will, they generally be in pass rush situations. But, you know, we're probably overthinking this a little too much because if this is one of Notre Dame's biggest problems, another defensive end heading into the season, Notre Dame's in pretty good shape.
Yeah. And I think too, like what type of football shape is he in? He was playing at 255 pounds. He's 6'2". He came in obviously as a linebacker. So, is he maintaining that size and endurance and all those type of things? Obviously, he didn't have a spring training too. So I think he's the type of guy who probably is taking care of himself. But was he starting to cut some of that weight? You see people stop playing football. Sometimes they shrink pretty quickly because they're not in the weight room all the time and working with nutritionists and all that stuff. So I think a lot of it's going to come down to that too. But yeah, I think he's a great teammate, and having him on the team, I think if he had known this in January, it would have been a no-brainer. He would have been back.
That's a good final point on this. If you knew this in January, Junior Tui Halamaka would be back. So that means that Freeman and Ash and Charlie doesn't have Al Washington in his corner anymore. I'm sure Charlie Partridge likes Tui Halamaka's tape. Maybe they could ask him to put on the Georgia game, and he could go ahead and say, yeah, I'd like that guy on my team, considering he was the hero of that game defensively. Pretty big game to be a hero of, so it's one of those guys where, from our point of view, if he's back, there's literally no downside. The only downside is somewhere in there with the general manager having to make something else work and maybe the hurt feelings of the transfer you brought in. But most of the time, outside of tight ends, it seems like Marcus Freeman has decided, I don't care what you think, I'm trying to make the
football better. It's all about enhancing.
Yeah, enhancing. Our countdown has ended, guys. It's a long summer, 102 of them this time. We actually squeezed 102 into 90 days, so kudos to us. I don't know if anybody noticed that or not. We're doubling up sometimes throughout. That's what has to happen with these rosters. So we have a good question here related. Irish Cub fan says, it is January 25th. Notre Dame just claimed the national championship. Who is the biggest riser from the preseason to postseason countdown list impacting the championship game, quite obviously?
You want to take turns on this? I think we got another question coming up where we're going to take turns. The lowest... I start at 50, and the lowest ranked of those players that I think could be on that would be number 49, Ian Premer. I mean, obviously that's a guy that could impact the offense from day one.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. I didn't go quite as deep, but I think Quincy Porter being higher than 26, which maybe is too high if he's not really where he wants to be coming into fall camp. But I think if they hit on the boundary receiver and he's closer to the high or lower teens, like 13, 14, even just somebody they can rely upon with what we think we're going to get out of Graham and Faison too, that would give Notre Dame a really dynamic receiving core.
I think the answer is Premer. I had Premer at 33, so I definitely think the answer is Premer. Even from there, he'd rise probably to 22, right, Tim? If they win a national championship and he makes an impact. Maybe Fitzgerald, 41.
He would be next on my list, and yes.
Fitzgerald would be on that list. Yeah, I was pretty high on Foramo, but 33 is high anyway. I don't know if people know this. When you do this countdown postseason, Tim and I have done it every year postseason, and Drew did last year. 33 is a good player on Notre Dame's team. Like, people think, oh, that's the backup, whatever. It just might be a rotational defensive end. It might have been Junior Tui Halamaka when he made the sack against Georgia. And that was like, that's That's a good player.
Not in today's game. I mean, 33 is that's a guy that's making a significant contribution.
Yeah.
Especially as deep as you go, you know, defensively.
Right. There's so, yeah, you're thinking 10 defensive linemen, 5 linebackers, 10 defensive backs. That's incredible. And then Notre Dame, of course, keeps having to play more than 8 offensive linemen, but they hope not to have to do that this year.
Yeah. We talk about Matty Augustine a lot. He was number 39. I think Jaden Sanders at 38 could be a guy that ends up being extremely valuable in the secondary for them. And, you know, I think we all still have questions about how the nickel is going to turn out. Will Christian Gray nail down that spot? Or will an extremely gifted Dallas Golden emerge there instead or as well as Gray?
There was no jinx on this last week because we had Notre Dame Director of Athletics Pete Pavakwa on our own podcast after the deal was announced with SoFi, and Notre Dame will be putting a patch on all of its athletic jerseys. This has been covered in print on our message board and in podcast form, but I wanted to give you guys both a chance to answer these two questions because I thought of them today and I was proud of myself. I wanted to go ahead and toot my own horn. How much do you care? How much would you care if there was no NIL?
That's a good one.
I know the answer to the first one. It's okay.
Excellent way of phrasing it. I don't care. No, I mean, I don't care that much because if you want to remain an independent and you can't count on, you know, falling back on your conference, you've got to find ways to generate revenue, you know, and if you want to spend with the big boys, I think it's like kind of trendy and a cool thing to say, oh, I hate it. It's awful. It's rotten. It's just a patch, man. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. Notre Dame has a lot of very loyal advertisers with them. Now they don't all appear on the upper left-hand corner of a football jersey or, you know, jerseys in general. I get that, but it's a good question. How much you would care with NIL? I don't know. It's difficult to say that because it is here. And it is real. And I'm not sure how to answer that then.
I would say I care a lot from the standpoint that I would be really disappointed if they didn't do something like this. I mean, we're looking at the Protect College Sports Act might raise the cap to like $49 million overall for your athletics. Notre Dame is getting just over 40% of that potentially from this patch deal. Like, as you mentioned, they're not in a conference. I mean, after what the Big 12 just did too, where they're getting that much from, I believe, Monster Energy for the entire conference to divide up too. So, I mean, I feel like this type of thing is a no-brainer. We've seen it's in the NBA and professional sports now. It's not, I don't know, a prediction market or something like that that's a little out there. It's a well-known company who sponsors the Rams Stadium and has a connection to the university and all that stuff too. So I think it's like a good steward of the brand as well. And I guess I wouldn't care if it, if NIL weren't there, then I would probably be like, yeah, don't do something like this. But I think this is important in this modern era to keep up as things are rapidly changing. And I mean, Notre Dame's out in front of the pack with how much they got too. So I think it's really important.
The first sarcastic but also accurate thing on our staff thread was when someone said, people should get used to us. This is the price of all those defensive ends they're celebrating. It's absolutely true.
It's true.
Totally true. But it is a great, I just love the thought of no NIL, okay? There's no Mike Martin doesn't exist. There's no general manager. Chad Bowden's still running around planting leprechauns when guys come in and visit and you're trying to woo guys and you don't worry about money. Notre Dame's going to put a patch on their jersey. What do you guys think? I bet you a lot more people be mad if they're just doing it.
Yeah, I think you're right. In a perfect world, this wouldn't be necessary, but we live in a very imperfect college football world right now, and it is absolutely necessary. Congratulations to, you know, Pete Bavakwa, and thank him again for coming on our podcast and discussing it. It is what it is, man. It's 2026. Let's not act like we are shocked by this. It's been trending this way for the shocking thing is it hasn't happened sooner.
I just think it's funny that there was actually somebody posted on the board, Ohio State is getting a patch on its jersey. And my first thought was like, yeah, Notre Dame's going to get a patch on its jersey too. But I was thinking like 1 year from now, it was 2 days later.
Yeah, it was 2 days.
that would have been good times. I'm glad not a lot of people got a chance to chime in and show their delicate sensibilities were offended on that thread because it only lasted 24 hours, but it could have gotten a lot worse. We'll be back with segment 2, burning up the boards. We're back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from Maltese Irish, who had two good ones this time, but we have a rule, guys. Only one Maltese Irish and only one person each time. He asks, if given the opportunity to watch one-on-one drills in camp that are fully live, do you want offensive line versus defensive line, wide receiver versus DB, and RB versus LB matchup? Which would you like to see? Why don't we all take one of those, guys?
Yeah, I'm going to start with, and, you know, we all love wide receiver DB. There's a lot of action there. You're judging a quarterback, how they play the ball. But the first one that came to mind was Boubacar Traore versus Will Black off the edge.
Yes, great one. We don't know enough about Will Black. That's what we need to see.
I actually went for wide receiver, defense back. I'll take that one. And we don't get to see it very often in scrimmage situations. So I'm on out front of the Jordan Faison hype train coming to this. So I'd really like to see him versus Leonard Moore in one-on-ones. It's the only time we get to see that. We don't see Leonard Moore lose much. So getting the chance to see that, how Faison matches up, obviously he would have a disadvantage in length and a lot of other places, but what could he do in some of those situations?
It's interesting. I was thinking along the same lines for wide receiver, but I want to see Faison against DJ McKinney and see what they have in DJ McKinney, because I want to see if he can handle the hardest guy to handle, especially if CJ Carr is the one delivering the pass there. I struggle with running back linebacker because I actually know what's going to happen if somebody's a blitz pickup against Aeneas Williams. Exactly what he did as a freshman that made Max Bullock cuss in front of us. He's going to win. Aeneas Williams is good in blitz pickup, Priester.
Yeah, he is. And I think he's going to show, just like you've been saying all offseason, I'm really looking forward to seeing what kind of season he has running the football. I'll stay on that D-line, O-line. You know, I think we all want to see a lot more of Francis Brew and Teon Gray. We just, you know, rep. We'd like to see reps. I'd like to see Francis Brew against Anthony Knapp. I think that's strong on strong. That's two really guys pound for pound, very, very strong going head to head.
I think with Williams too, I think if KVA were fully healthy, just what he can do in a pass rush situation and how good he is in coverage, I think either of those matchups versus Williams to kind of see what we have. Because if you can beat KVA in any of those, then you can beat pretty much any linebacker in the country. And that's a big size disadvantage, all those things too. So I don't think KVA will be at a point where I think that's where we want to see him doing those things just yet. But I think if he were full go, that would be a great matchup.
My final one, I think, would be, I love that drill. We watched it. It was either 2023. I think it was 2023. The running backs and the linebackers or safeties line up on opposite sides of that large pad, like a tackling pad, hand off the ball. And it's basically you're meeting in the middle for a goal line drill. Let's see Kedron Young do one. Let's see Kedron Young go against any of those starting linebackers. Go hit Drake. Go have Drake Bowen hit you. Break it off. Like Jeremiah Love ran over Jalen Snead in that drill. Like this was pre-2024, because I was like, whoa, I did not expect that. I would love to see Kedron Young be able to do that to one of Notre Dame's top linebackers and see if there's really something there.
I want to see Christian Gray and Dallas Golden against every slot receiver.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have one full practice and there's so much to watch. And we're always asked, what are the one or two things you're going to be watching? And these are some of them, but it's just, there's so much you want to watch that you don't get to see everything. But Nickel's going to be huge, because if Notre Dame is really good at nickel, that back end isn't going to give up a whole lot this year.
This second question is related. We'll let Drew draft first. You get three picks, but you have to draft them for your answers from Irish Truffle Fries. Which players are you going to watch during this first practice? In other words, if you don't draft him, you don't get to write about him. And you can't say he took my answer. Be prepared, is what Irish Truffle Fries tells us. Drew, you go first.
Well, if I'm, I guess, trying to get the most read practice report with who I'm picking, and Teddy Girard would be my first choice. And I'm generally curious to see him too. Obviously, it should be in high school still. Could have a big future ahead of him. Obviously, there's a lot of questions we get on backup quarterbacks. Are we doing a rotating draft, or should I go all three?
Rotating. It's like a draft.
Okay.
It's like,
all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Draft. Yeah.
Tim, you go second.
I already said the guy, DJ McKinney. I need to see
That would have been, yeah. And I could say Christian Gray, but I've said him several times here already. And Mylon Graham. I mean, I think, like, we had somebody ask us, was it last week, that, you know, you guys placed him number 9 in your countdown. He only saw a couple practices, and that's fair, but you didn't see what we saw. And what we saw was an extremely quick twitch guy from the first snap that he took, right? All of us saw the first snap that he took. Wow. Okay. That's a different type of athlete out there. So that would be my next choice.
Yeah. I mean, he stands out in basic position group drill. So I like that one. My next one, I'm going to go with Jaden Greathouse. Like, does he give you anything? Like, we're going to talk about him so much. They need another wide receiver out there. Like, I just want to see him healthy out there. Like, I'm not even saying he needs to be making plays, but just, can he be out there? As somebody who also tweaked his hamstring over the summer playing pickleball, I have a little more sympathy for him too.
Don't be out for 9 months. Then you really know there's an issue. I'm going with Ian Premmer. Speaking of people reading my practice report, I might put a big picture of Premmer jumping in the air, catching the ball in there. And Ian Premmer would be my next choice. I'm definitely going to focus on Premmer if I have offense or that. Just so much buzz about him. I'd love to see him.
Kingston Viliamuasa. I mean, if he is ready to hit the ground running when camp opens or even shortly thereafter, that is significant. All the reports are very positive, but as always, we'd like to see it ourselves. And so we'll be watching, you know, not only the reps that he takes, but how he moves in between reps just to see exactly how he's feeling when camp opens on Thursday.
Last one would be Kari Adams. I mean, I feel like he's a little bit forgotten, but he's still a 5-star corner. We didn't get to see him this spring. He's, you know, had the injury and maybe not the perfect offseason, but I still, he's super talented and could be that next great cornerback in Notre Dame. So I'm excited to see him for the first time on the field.
Because I assume we will not see Quincy Porter in pads and we will not see Charles Jogason in pads. They're not available for the answer here. And otherwise it would be one of those guys, but I am going with Rodney Dunham to further what I saw in the spring. And speaking of matchups, you mentioned Traore against Will Black. Let's see a little Rodney Dunham again against Will Black, because he won that one in the jersey scrimmage. That was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, he did. We could go on. I'm going to end up repeating some of the same guys that we talked about earlier in the podcast. But, you know, I mean, Ashton Craig, how far along is he? Is he ready to start the season? Probably not. But you have Joe Otting there ready to roll. But, you know, again, Bruin and Teon Gray, those guys, if those guys can be as good as we think they are, and since they arrived, we don't mention Jason Onyeh a whole lot, but Onyeh had a pretty darn good season last year, finished seventh or so, eighth in tackles on the defense. And so looking to see forward to all those matchups in the trenches, because there's a lot of new matchups that'll be taking place.
Our next question is from NDBG SoCal. Most fans watch games by following the ball. How do each of you watch games and why?
I unfortunately get caught watching the ball offensively, especially because, well, it was really with Riley Leonard because he was either running the ball or throwing it. So Riley Leonard, you just watch the whole time. The best thing to watch, I think, pre-snap is probably motion and stuff. If you want to do it that way, if you want to really be smart about it, watch motion, see how motion affects the defense. So if you could watch guys motioning and how it moves the defense and how it impacts things, that's probably high to watch. After the snap, be good to watch your running back. But I sit there, as Priester knows, and I sit in between you guys. I just have my binoculars right on the center and guard, and that's what I see on every snap. So I will miss some downfield plays, but I watch whoever gets beaten up front, and whoever wins up front on both sides of the ball, I watch in middle of the line, and then I quickly put my binoculars down and try to find CJ Carr throwing the ball.
That's generally how I do it. I had to laugh because I was going to say I'd be lying if I said I didn't follow the ball too often sometimes. But I think what we all try to do, I don't want to speak for everybody, but what you're saying, Tim, is focus on the line of scrimmage. Take a quick look to see how the secondary reacts to motion or whatever pre-snap. And then you have to kind of pull back from there. You know, on one hand, you want to watch the routes unfold. On the other hand, you want to watch the pass rush and the pass protection. So, you know, I think sometimes down and distance and situation kind of dictates what you're looking for. You anticipate, like a hitter anticipating a breaking ball on a 2-2 count or whatever. You kind of anticipate what might happen. And of course you don't always get what you anticipate happening. So it's difficult, which is why many, many, many years ago, we started rewatching a game and breaking it down and taking many hours on Sunday to watch the game, because you just can't see everything, certainly from the ninth floor of the Notre Dame press box.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. Like, I definitely watch the ball more than I'd like sometimes, but I agree the motion matters a lot too. And I think even just on defense, like I think back to the USC game where they motioned a receiver and then Dallas Golden put his hands up in the air and didn't look like he knew what he was doing. And seeing, and then not seeing USC realize to take advantage of that, I think you get a lot of information like that. So I do try when new or younger players come in on either side of the ball, I think I try and look out for that too. Like when Ronnie Dunham gets his first snaps against Wisconsin, I'll definitely be watching him and trying to focus on that rather than the ball.
Somebody, one of our colleagues made a point once, like, we really should watch, I don't do it either, we really should watch the secondary live because you don't get the replay of it. Like, Tim, you say we go back and watch.
Right.
You can see,
you don't even get that
easily on replay.
Yeah.
You see everything. Right. You don't know who was, like, some, that's the question we get that I can't answer very often. Tim, why weren't they throwing to so-and-so? Was he open? Shoot, I don't know. I was watching the guard the whole time. So maybe, you know, that is literally, but it's going to, I'm going to try. I'm going to try to watch and see if, guy, you know what, if they're open, CJ Carr hit him nowadays. So I'm not going to worry about that for a little while. Next time there's a quarterback in there that's not CJ Carr, I'm going to go look and see if somebody was open that CJ Carr missed, because I have a feeling he's going to find the guy, and then I'll just watch the replay.
Question number four from Bobby 1556. Three names we keep hearing about being contributors in 2026 are Ashton Craig, Jaden Greathouse, and Charles Jagusa. If my math is correct, they've combined to play in a total of 54 of 123 possible games. Craig, 17 out of 41. Greathouse, 32 out of 41. And Jagusa, 5 games out of 41. Can we really rely on these three guys, or would any contribution be more than a pleasant surprise?
Pleasant surprise, comes back to play football this year. Not a crazy surprise. They expect, the last thing I heard, and we reported this on this podcast, he expects to play football. So if Jagusa contributes, that's a pleasant surprise. That's the highest. It's still a pleasant surprise if Jagusa contributes and ends up starting a game for Notre Dame or something this year. That would be great. I think you should expect to see Greathouse and Ashton Craig. I got a good report on Greathouse this week, but I know we at Irish Illustrated, some of us got a bad report on Greathouse 3 weeks prior. And so I'm not sure, because it was a summer report. It wasn't like, oh, it was like he had a great summer and oh no, he's still not all the way there. So those are just opposite reports. It's kind of like August camp last year for sure. The middle of August camp, you just hear totally different things. So you should expect Greathouse to play. I mean, he has to come back from this injury and play football. And then Craig should be back during the year. You should expect Ashton Craig to come back and start during the season.
I think it's fair. I think the key word is, can we rely on these guys or can you? I don't think so at this point. I think with all three of them, you're looking at multiple seasons of them missing significant time for various reasons throughout their career. So I think, I'm not saying it would be a pleasant surprise for Greathouse and Craig, as you just said, but I do think you shouldn't count on them for the whole season and potentially even for Notre Dame's biggest games. Like, they just haven't proven that they can stay out there. And I feel like we're kind of like a broken record sometimes talking about Greathouse. So I just don't think you can rely on it until we see it.
Yeah. Rely is the key word, Drew. And, you know, I mean, Jagusa, five games is all that he's played. And, you know, I always kind of bristle at the term injury prone. Look, when you're playing football, everybody's injury prone to some degree. And sometimes you just get caught in a situation where you can't avoid a particular injury. Now, Greathouse with a hamstring, that's pretty problematic for a wide receiver.
It is.
And then two ACLs to the same knee with Ashton Craig is, you know, is concerning. But we talked about earlier this summer that he was confident in the spring that, hey, I'm going through this for a second time and I'm further ahead than I was the first time. Whether that's completely accurate or not, I don't know. But rely on them? Well, no, they're not. None of them are in the starting lineup right now until they prove otherwise.
Next question is from NDKegs03. Pete Sampson likes to say the outcome of the first game often indicates how the season will go. What outcome, stat line, or I will throw in here, guys, performance by certain players against Wisconsin would give you an indication that 12-0 and your call to a run to the national championship was the correct one?
There, for me, there's nothing that can happen in a Wisconsin game that would say, oh, okay, they're going to win the national title. It's Wisconsin. They've struggled.
12-0. Let's say 12-0. What would you look at it and say 12-0 instead? Because then
I really don't think I would, being Wisconsin. Having said that, we've talked about this through the summer. You know, I think Wisconsin's going to be better. I think they're definitely going to be better and more dangerous at quarterback. I like some of the components defensively. So I guess what I would say is I don't know that there's a stat that would get me to get that excited about a win over Wisconsin. But Wisconsin was great against the run last year, and that's why I say defensively they have some components. Their linebackers are very good, and they were freshmen last year. They gave up 3.4 yards per carry. If Notre Dame runs the football effectively against Wisconsin, okay, I think that's a really, really great sign as to what's to come. But I don't know if there's one stat just because of where Wisconsin is. They're 4-8 team last year, and I don't know that anything that you do against them is going to tilt my opinion in the favor of, you know, something the magnitude of a national title.
I think it would be good to beat the expectations of Vegas comfortably. Like if you win by 21 easily, it's not like a late cover or anything like that. Like they're up by 21 most of the game, and you know, they just look in control. And part of that, I think, would be the offense and being able to run the ball with Aeneas Williams and Nolan James. They averaged, I think, 203 yards on the ground last year, Notre Dame did. If they can get over 200 yards against this Wisconsin team, which you mentioned, that has a pretty good linebacker core because they're up big and they just need to show they can run the ball, I think that would be a really good sign that they can kind of be that complete team that we're, you know, there's still some question marks there after losing Love and Price.
I'm actually going the other way and not defense because I know what I'm going to see, I think. I think if I'm sitting there trying to do the postgame notebook, figuring out who the offensive MVP is, and I can't decide between Greathouse and Mylon Graham, that's a huge sign for Notre Dame. I'm just sitting there thinking, man, Greathouse had two TDs and 97 yards. Mylon Graham had those two giant plays, and that's
fair.
If those guys join Jordan Faison, which I'm just, he's the given, I will think that Notre Dame is going to do an awfully good job offensively. I don't have a question defensively. Nothing could happen. They're like, oh yeah, Leonard Moore shut this guy down. That was a great job by Leonard Moore. The defense is going to play well against Wisconsin.
Our next question is from Paul Gerard. In honor of O'Malley mentioning Pedro striking out five of the greatest hitters of a generation in the 1999 All-Star Game, what is the greatest single-game performance by a Notre Dame player, accounting for strength of the opposition?
Tim, go ahead. I'm gonna let you guys comment on more present-day stuff.
I'm going to go on just games. I had to watch them for me to do it. So the Sugar Bowl by Bettis against Florida, when Notre Dame was a massive underdog and Bettis just took over the game with three touchdowns. Because that accounts for the opponent. Less accounting for the opponent, one of the best games I've ever seen for a Notre Dame player. Good, solid top 25 opponent was Golden Tate against Washington in 2009. He absolutely carried Notre Dame, and he was an unstoppable rebel force, like they say on Meet the Parents. Golden Tate was phenomenal in that game. But if you're looking at the opponent, Bettis beating Florida, pretty big deal.
I think, again, very well phrased by Paul Gerard as far as the magnitude of the opponent, because like you can go back to, like I can say Joe, and I did see these games, I wasn't working them yet, believe it or not, but Joe Theismann in 1970 when he threw for 526 yards in a torrential downpour, they lost at USC, 526 yards, Jack Cohn's the only one that's approached that, and that's because he threw 110 times, 68 times against Oklahoma State, but I mean, it was a remarkable performance in horrible conditions, but USC was 6-4-1 that year. And the same way I can point to, Reggie Brooks against USC in 92 when he rushed for 227, but that was a 6-5-1 USC team. So
that was just fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So the one that I would pick out, and I guess it's, you know, again, it's for old timers, and I represent the old timers. 1966. Terry Hanratty's first game as starting quarterback, Jim Seymour. Jim Seymour, 13 catches, 276 yards, three touchdowns. Purdue at the time was very, very good with Bob Greasy as their quarterback, Mike Phipps, and then Bob Greasy as their quarterback. And or was it the other way around? Anyway, that was a really good opponent, and Hanratty to Seymour dissected him that day.
I want to give one more shout-out to my era for the surprise and the opponent. Notre Dame, 9-point underdog at Michigan, number 3 Michigan, 1993. We've only seen Kevin McDougal play against Northwestern, and it was not all that impressive. And he looked like a combination of Randall Cunningham and Steve Young against Michigan. He was absolutely outstanding, by far the best player on the field that day. And He's not by far the best player on that field in real life. Consider all the players for Michigan and Notre Dame that played in that game, and Kevin McDougal stood out above all of them. So I would say that's probably my shout-out guy.
Yeah, I just thought some quickly that I covered, at least to a degree. I mean, I think Jeremiah Love having 265 total yards against USC last year. I know USC's game plan on defense was terrible, but it was still raining. They needed him to do those things, and I think that was pretty unreal and just kind of cemented him in the Heisman conversation. And then the game that always sticks out in my mind is Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah against Clemson in 2020. He's only had 9 tackles, but that forced fumble, or whatever you want to call it, on the toss to ETN, I think that really kind of set the tone that Notre Dame has some of the best players and is in that game. And he finished with 9 tackles, 2.5 for a loss, half a sack, and that touchdown that I think just really sticks in my mind. And those two jumped out to me.
Every third game that Ross Browner played.
It's probably true. You just go start clicking on them and seeing what pops up.
I mean, that was Ellen Wasilewski from Notre Dame went back and tried to get because they didn't keep sacks then. It was just tackles for loss. And so he tried to determine what was what. And so it's still not an official record. The official record still belongs to Isaiah Foskey career-wise. But in reality, Ross Browner holds the record because he was in the opposing team's backfield most games.
Because somebody might bring this up, if Jeff Burris had caught the 3 Charlie Ward passes that hit him in the hands against Florida State in 1993, A, they might not have jumped Notre Dame. And B, he also had a rushing touchdown. So think of how good that game would have been against #1 Florida State.
We have a question from Kay Beasley, question #7. It looks like the AP preseason poll comes out on August 17th. Based on the last podcast talking about your personal top fives, who do you predict will be the AP top 5?
Go ahead, Drew.
I'm going to go. I think Ohio State's going to get a lot of love, and then Texas. So those are the 1-2. Oregon and Dante Moore, I think, is a lot of people's, at least the people who cover the sport and are going to vote in the AP poll, their Heisman favorite. And so I'm going to go to Oregon 3, Notre Dame 4, and then Georgia 5.
I have a slight edge to Texas over Ohio State in the vote. I did it the other way around in my personal poll was Notre Dame, Ohio State, Texas. Then I had Oregon, Georgia. I'm rethinking that. I might have Oregon, Iowa, IU, by the way. But I think the AP will go Texas, Ohio State, Oregon, Notre Dame, and Georgia out of habit, like I did. I might go IU if in my real poll. And I'm not. I'm going like the power of your team, how good you are, not because your schedule stinks or anything like that. I'm going by how good you are, no matter who you play. But I think the AP. I think the AP goes defaults to Georgia.
I agree.
As number five. It's #5. Okay. Yeah. Here is who Indiana opens with. And I realize that Notre Dame, people can do this with Notre Dame's schedule as well. But they play North Texas, Howard, Western Kentucky, Northwestern, all at home. First 4 games at home. Is that correct? Yeah.
Do voters try to figure out how you're going to finish, or they just vote for the best team, though? Like, should you be trying to figure out who has a terrible schedule and you're picking them? Or should you say, this is the best team in the country?
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you, when you pick a, I'm sure AP voters, you know, try to consider both.
Try to be right. Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not putting IU in my top 5, and I probably should because they do have Ohio State and at Michigan back to back. That'll be very interesting. But anyway, my pick, I think AP will vote for Texas #1.
Yeah.
I have Ohio State #2, Georgia #3, Notre Dame 4, and Oregon 5. That's how I'm predicting that they will rank them preseason.
Do we all agree the only team to sneak in would be from the AP would be IU? Not Miami in the top 5. There's only 7 teams you can pick for the top 5.
I think I'm pretty certain it's going to be the 5 that the three of us mentioned.
Yeah. But wouldn't I think IU 6 and Miami 7 is probably.
Yeah.
And I think everybody else gets spread out.
Yeah, I think Mensa might get a lot of love and could fault them, but I agree IU should be most likely ahead of them.
And they are ahead of them because they beat them on the field for the national championship. So whether they're behind them or ahead of them, they won't care at all, IU fans. They can play anybody they want. Next question. MN Irish 2018. This is fun because your answers cannot include Miami, SMU, or BYU. So it makes it way harder. Notre Dame's feather in the cap win will be against whom?
Drew?
I think this is tough when you take out those three teams specifically, but I'm going to go with North Carolina, just beating them by 40, and you're still beating Bill Belichick, even if maybe he shouldn't be coaching college and all that stuff. But I'd have to go with that one.
I don't see a single team among the other nine that a Notre Dame fan will say, that's a real feather in Notre Dame's cap.
Wisconsin.
If they beat them.
They're going to kill. If they kill Wisconsin.
If they kill Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I guess that's the closest for me, but I don't, because the spreads, how many times did Wisconsin lose by three touchdowns last year?
Yeah, but if they beat Wisconsin 41-0 to start the year.
No, I mean, well, okay, that's fair, but yeah. I'm legitimately asking you, how many times did Wisconsin lose by three touchdowns or more in 12 games last year? I know the answer I'm asking you.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's four times.
Oh, okay.
So it can happen. I know this year is this year, and I think that they're an improved football team, but I don't know. I saw a feather in a cap, and it's like, I don't see Notre Dame fans. I mean, happy about the starting of the season. If it's 41-0, yeah, absolutely. Jump on the bandwagon. Nobody can come close.
Yeah,
you know, that line of thinking will be prevalent, but I don't really know that there's a feather in a cap kind of game with other than those three.
Would you say on this schedule, if they did the Georgia Tech win, be feather in the cap game? Went down to Georgia Tech and
they didn't have their starting quarterback, but I thought so. I thought that was a real, real dangerous game. Yeah.
Notre Dame will need a gutsy call versus whom? Maybe not to win it, but maybe just like separate in the fourth quarter if you're looking at it that way.
I think the only one I can go with after this is Syracuse. I mean, maybe they get back to borderline 10-win team and Jelly's healthy. There's some pressure there. It's the last game of the season. Maybe it's to be undefeated. Like, there could be more pressure, and we've seen them, even against USC 2 years ago, need to have some gutsy moments. Again, I think USC went 6-6 that year, so I think that's the most likely candidate.
This is where I would pick North Carolina, because I think defensively they got some pretty good components. Abujade at defensive end. We've mentioned his name a few times here this summer. He's very good. And they put pressure on the quarterback. So, you know, maybe it's on the road. I realize that, you know, everything that's happening with North Carolina right now, everybody thinks that program's just going to implode here. It was funny. I did the coaching ranking, and I had Belichick and Petrino and Belichick's son, who did a hell of a job last year with their defense, up very high. And people were putting them at the bottom saying it's a dumpster fire. Well, it is a dumpster fire. But those three coaches are pretty good at what they do. And so that's why I had them as high as I did. But I think North Carolina could be, you know, if you get off to a little bit of a slow start and North Carolina does some things defensively, you know, against Notre Dame on the road, it might be that game.
Mine is the same as Drew. For the same reason, all the pressure's on Notre Dame to keep the bye 11-0. You just played your hardest games two of the last 3 weeks. I mean, I know they've been killing Boston College and South Bend, but Boston College fought like hell against Notre Dame last year out in BC. That was, yeah. So I don't know. I think, I mean, when you play, I guess there's a break after BYU a bye, but when you have BYU, Navy, Miami, BC, SMU leading in, could be a little worn down compared to the beginning. Final one from MN Irish. He says, there will be such an impressive win over blank, they will pull an Arkansas and fire their coach.
Drew, go ahead.
I don't want to repeat either of my first two answers, because I think those would both work, but I'm going to go with Wisconsin. I think it would be kind of a weird poetic moment too if Marcus Freeman got Luke Fickell fired from his job. But honestly, I was surprised he came back this year, and they stood by him the way they did. So maybe a huge loss to start this season could really just ignite that hot seat.
So who are the candidates? Would be Fickell at Wisconsin,
Belichick
with what's happening in North Carolina, Bill O'Brien with things aren't, you know, and again, a lot of that's beyond his control. You can't keep your best players so the bad teams get worse. And then Syracuse, Fran Brown, although I don't think like one of these guys is going to get fired the week after he plays Notre Dame.
What if Barry Odom was in his third year? We could do that one. Barry Odom's in his second year, though.
If you're betting on this, you would take Fran Brown, because it makes the most sense to fire a coach at the last game of the season. So if they're winning three games again, like, that is the obvious answer.
But I don't know that Purdue's going to find a much better head coach under the circumstances than Barry Odom. I realize that he was a 500 coach at Missouri, but they had a pretty quick trigger with him at Missouri. He did a really good job at UNLV. I think Purdue, they're trying to play more physically. That's about all I can
say. Hey, Purdue had the best flag football play of the college football season last year to score a touchdown on Notre Dame. So I got to give him credit for that one. That was gorgeous. Yeah, that's a tough call. I guess Fran Brown's only makes sense because it's the end of the year. But Fickle, did you guys know I heard Phil Steele on my long drive to Chicago, Jack Freeman, there and back this Sunday or this Saturday? They've lost their starting quarterback three straight years at some point.
That's exactly right.
And so Phil Steele literally said, he's like, because the question was, who should we hire after Luke Fickle? And Phil Steele said, you should hire Luke Fickle. So he has some belief in Luke Fickle. But as I said, if it's 41-7, there's going to be a lot less belief in Luke Fickle versus Marcus Freeman. Final question. And this is our final offseason question, guys, if you consider training camp in season. Irish Gambler, in this hypothetical, you receive word that the number three or number two at some position is having a fantastic camp and pushing his way to the top of the number twos. At what position would this help Endy the most? Where does quarterback land on your list?
True.
I went with wide receiver, but boundary wide receiver specifically. I mean, if we're hearing Devin Fitzgerald is getting reps with the ones and having a fantastic camp, I think that'd be good for them. Or even, I mean, Quincy Porter came back. I think there's a lot of options. The other one would be, and I guess to answer the quarterback part, I think it's pretty low if your goal is to win a national championship, because while you do want that second string quarterback and to know who that is, like, if you need CJ Carr out there to win. So I'd rather have people ascending at other spots if that's the goal. And I think that would help the team out more overall.
I mean, you certainly look at the quarterback position, but it's a moot point if Carr stays healthy.
Yeah.
So therefore, I don't know that. And the point that Drew's making about it doesn't matter how good of a preseason camp any of those guys have. He's not going to push the starter. I don't know. Dallas Golden at nickel. Maybe. Yes.
I know, this was what I was going to say. Actually.
Yeah. Dallas Golden at nickel. I just, the athleticism and length. And if you look at his height and weight, I think it's generally the same as Christian Gray, but he just plays with length and reach and athleticism. And I thought that was very obvious from the very beginning when we first saw him last year. And so I'm really high on him being a guy that could really push for that spot.
I guess I will go with, because I love the number one there, but he definitely needs help. If you hear that number three running back or number four running back, he could be right now, Kedren Young is having the best camp among all the running backs and they have a new 1B, that would be a different world.
That would be awesome.
Any of the running backs. Not any. We know James is solid. I don't think James is spectacular. So if they say Jonas Walton or Kedren Young or Javion Osborne is just absolutely lights out and he's number 2A, I'd think, oh, that's huge. Not to take away from Nolan James. He's a good player. He's going to be 1B or 2. But I don't think he is a spectacular option. Whereas since we don't know anything about the young guys, we can just call them spectacular, pretty sure. Isn't that how this works? When you don't see guys play?
We get a lot of questions about how great the Notre Dame running back room is. And on paper it is, but in reality, it's not proven at all.
And it's not close to last year. So it's definitely, that was great. That was great. We need to temper great with that room. Otherwise the words have no meaning. Like Jay Billis said, great was last year's running back room.
Going to be hard to reach last year's
performance. Yeah. We're going to see the running backs, although there won't be a lot to be tackled, guys, on Thursday. That's unfortunate. But we will be back on Thursday, August 6th, with a mid-afternoon taping podcast of Irish Illustrated Insider, because we are going to go to practice, interview the coordinators and some players. I'm guessing those are going to be the best players humanly possible that they're going to send out there. And then we have to write our practice reports, and then we will film the podcast. So we're actually going to skip this one time instant analysis to go straight to podcast form. So until then, for Tim Priester and Drew Mentock, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.